I call the meeting of the Legacy and Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Feng, have you looked at the minutes for March 17?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the approval of the minutes for March 17, 2023.
Thank you very much for taking a look at that. And all of those favors say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevail, and the minutes are approved. We have a House file 1965, Representative Finke. Rakamazoo. And this will be laid over for possible inclusion. Tell us about your bill, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Hussein and members of the committee. This is the legacy appropriation bill for the Como Zoo, and I am going to just turn it over. There's nothing that I can say that will be better than the zoo.
Good morning. For the record, my name's Michelle Fur, and I'm actually going to ask my colleagues here from our public engagement team, they're just going to walk and introduce you to a couple of our animals if you didn't get a chance to see, so I'll just have them just walk up. And we have with us Chucky the Hedgehog and two of our tortoises that were born at Como in July, and they are pancake tortoises, so they're just baby tortoises. So they'll give you a little bit of a peek while I always get upstaged by the animals, but I'll go ahead and start my testimony while they're walking around. But thanks again for having us here at your hearing today, talking about the Legacy Amendment and Como Zoo. Como Park Zoo and Conservatory is just a treasure in Minnesota's backyard, a world-class natural wonder in the heart of our state. Como is owned by all, free for all, and enjoyed by all. And there are very few places like it anywhere else. At Como, we see our work as one part love, one part responsibility, and always a joy to share. For more than a century, we have been a fun, conveniently located, budget-friendly alternative, but we are so much more. We are driven by a powerful mission to inspire the public to value the presence of living things in our lives. At Como, we cultivate engaging experiences that spark curiosity, appreciation, and action in our natural world. Our core education pillars include ensuring lifelong learning, creating human-nature connections, being welcoming and providing a sense of belonging, and encouraging action through empathy. Como Park Zoo and Conservatory is one of the most visited cultural attractions in the state, with as many as 2 million annual visitors. And our visitors come from all over the state. In fact, 22% come from Greater Minnesota, which is roughly 400,000 people, and 16% come from out of state, which contributes to Como's economic impact of $162 million per year. Not only is Como free, it attracts a very diverse audience, racially, economically, and geographically. We are inclusive and provide access to all, whether it's creating fun experiences that deepen knowledge and a sense of connection, or making sure it's easy and welcoming for all people to visit. Como is always inviting. And we inspire learning. We invite everyone to share our love for the plants and animals so together we can protect them, keep them healthy, and help them flourish, those in our care, like those that you met today and around the world. Como has been a proud recipient of past legacy funding and a good steward of those statewide resources. These programs would not exist without the legacy funds. We have focused on providing programming for all Minnesotans, from artist programs, STEM education, music, and special events. We also have provided a number of inclusivity access for all events, including our sensory-friendly days, where we know that we are a very energetic, very stimulating experience. So we open up early for those families with people in their spectrum, on the spectrum, so that they can enjoy all the assets of Como. We also have senior strolls, where we also provide early access or late strolls through the garden so that that audience can enjoy Como as well. We have featured sign language days, where we have ALS interpreters doing all of our programs and talks. We have virtual segments like Como Live that we pivoted to during COVID, as well as Adventures with Ashley. If you recognized Ashley walking about, she does get recognized by a lot of third graders around the state of Minnesota. And now we are doing episodes called Como Cares. And every Thursday we have Little Explorers, which is free preschool programming right in the visitor center. This last biennium, we launched a pilot apprentice program for young people to get a paid working experience, partnering with the St. Paul Right Track program, a youth employment program, and they are paying the salaries of these young people. And our program through Legacy is supporting career development opportunities for these folks. There are many barriers for professional jobs in horticulture and zoology, including multiple unpaid internships, usually in multiple markets. The goal is to have our workforce reflect the communities we serve, and our graduates will meet minimum qualifications for zookeepers at any AZA or accredited institution around the country. One of my colleagues within the zoo industry once told me a stat that there are more rookie NFL positions each year than there are open zookeeper positions. And if you see the number of barriers that are involved in that process with those unpaid internships, you can see why how important this program is. We also have married the arts in our programming, from weekly music series that have featured over 60,000 attendees and 61 musicians last year, and the Summer of Sparky, where we had over 140 artists juried to design and paint 20 different Sparky statues representing our communities and cultures, and then they were placed all over Minnesota last summer. We have featured special exhibits that showcase art, pollinators, butterflies, and partnerships with other Minnesota museums. And this summer, we are featuring an interactive maze called Mission Safari. Guests will have to make choices and learn about the ecosystem if they want to get out. Other initiatives that have funded through the Legacy are our habitat renewals and the improved graphics, added interactives, and expanded encounters, and we've been able to leverage private dollars through our nonprofit partner Como Friends at 22% match to the Legacy funds for these programs. As I wrap up, I just want to say thank you. As I mentioned, these programs would not exist or continue without the Arts and Cultural Heritage Legacy funds and your past support. These programs do not have extra charges or admissions, and they are completely free. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, and bringing this bill forward, Como Zoo spent a lot of time in there, me and my kids. It's a fun place to be. Is there any discussion about the bill? Go ahead, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Hussein, and thank you so much, Representative Finke, for bringing this bill. My family spent, my girls growing up, I shouldn't admit this publicly, but we never went to the Minnesota Zoo because we always went to the Como Zoo. And as a stay-at-home mom and somebody was living on one income, it was really important for us to have access to educational programs, but learning opportunities and ways that they could also have fun, and I feel like that's all at the Como Zoo. And so I really thank you, and that we are not just a zoo for our city because it's in the city of St. Paul, but we know that people come from all over the state in order to come and visit our zoo. And so I just want to send my support of this bill, and I look forward to continue to support the Como Zoo.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Hussein. Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment. Thank you, Finke, for bringing this bill forward. The Como Zoo is a vital thread of the API community, especially the Hmong community. Come here as refugees in the 70s and 80s. Como Zoo was, I would say to you that a lot of memories were made, especially in my family, where all my grandfather and father's uncles who are no longer with me, we all made a trip to the Como Zoo annually as a family. And so not only that, but, you know, the Como McMurray Field and stuff plays host to the July 4 Festival for the Hmong community, which hosts about 80,000 Hmong people who come into St. Paul annually. So thank you for that. But my most fond memory of the Como Zoo is a conservatory where my parents always took me in there to take pictures with the flowers during the wintertime. And so thank you, Representative Finke, for bringing this bill forward, and looking forward to support it.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I also want to put a plug in that we feel spring, right? We all have spring fever and we can smell it coming, but the conservatory is a place where you can really get that sense, and we're opening up the spring flower show on Saturday if you need a little sense of flower and bright in your life.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Close. Backer. That's okay. I've been called Baker. Just don't call. Yes, I've never been called his name, so we're doing good. No, on a serious note, that's fine.
Sorry about that, Mr.
No, I have a twin brother, so I've been called Jay as much as Jeff. My identical twin is Jay, so no hard feelings. So, yeah, Chair, and my first question, I have two questions. My first question is do you know the demographics of the individuals that come to the zoo? Obviously, I would assume we're going to see a greater demographics or geographic location from the metro area, but how what type of reach do you have? Oh, any comment? I did see that, but do you know specifically, like, more of a regional approach?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative, from the visitorship of the demographics with the participants is in your handout, but from the just where the reach is, so 16% come from out of state. They're the tourist market. 22% are greater Minnesota. 16% are city of St. Paul, and we always want to look at that because we're owned and operated by the city, and they support us by 32% of our operating budget. So 42% come from the rest of that seven metro county area.
Okay, good. Any comment, Representative?
Another question per se, and if you said this, I do apologize. I see that we're asking for 1.75 fiscal year for this year and another 1.75. How does that compare to the last 2 years? And especially with COVID, because obviously I would assume this year you're going to see an uptake in visits just because we're getting back to normal. We'll knock on wood on that. But if you could comment on that, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so our last biennium, we received $1.5 million per year annually. So this is a bit of an increase that we're asking for just because we see the power of what we've been able to do and be good stewards of those funds and be able to stretch that so that even more can do that. From a COVID recovery, our attendance is still not to where it was in 2019, but I'm happy to say that January and February, despite the record snow, we actually had record attendance months for both of those years. So we are seeing folks that are coming back and enjoying the pieces. So we will see a larger volume as we continue in that recovery, and we're on a good stride with where we're at in early 23.
Go ahead. Thank you, Chair. In 2019, that sounds like that was your peak year. Mm-hmm. What was your peak year and how many roughly did you have?
Go ahead, Director.
Mr. Chair and Representative, our peak year was actually in 2011 with 2.2 million visitors. In 2019, because we're using that as a year over year now that we've been in this COVID and COVID recovery, our attendance was about 1.7 million. And we see sort of a 1.6 to 2.2 kind of up and down. And part of that arc is as we bring in special exhibits, those are can sustain attendance. And when you have a brand new opening of a new habitat or an exhibit, in 2011, we had just opened Gorilla Forest and then Ordway Gardens, which was our new bonsai and linked to our Japanese garden. So you kind of see those peaks and then that kind of crescendos and ups and downs.
Any follow-up?
Nope. No. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Lee. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Finke, I'm a little jealous. This is probably, I probably shouldn't pick favorites, but this is probably my favorite things that we work on here in this committee, and thank you for your leadership on this. Como is an amazing treasure, and we heard from a couple members this morning, but I just want to lean into just how great you've been for our state and for, you know, our all over the state. I see people that come through your doors that are, you know, all races, everyone, and it's just such a great place. And you mentioned the conservatory during the winter, but I love the financial aspect of it, and to me that's priceless. You know, some of the people that come here have maybe parking fees and other fees, and I just really value that you've created a place that people can get to. I'm in a different place now financially, but there was a time that for our family it was really the only place we could go. And there was nothing in the box. You had a donation box, and we couldn't put anything in there. And nobody shamed us, or nobody, you know, kept us, closed the door. I just really value that, how we were welcomed as a family. And now we go, and things are a little different. And maybe I can put something in the box. I'm glad that you've created that same place and continue to do that for our other Minnesotans. And so I really I want to thank you, Representative Finke, for bringing this bill. And it's, you know, I shouldn't pick children, but I'd say this is one of my favorites.
Thank you. Any closing comment, Representative Finke? This bill will be laid over.
Thank you, Chair Hussein and representatives, for all of your remarks. I share the sentiments that you're saying. I have lived within a half a mile of Como zoo for a number of years, and my kids and I have been there many times. We love it. The accessibility and the zero cost aspect of it is one of the few places you can reliably go and for a good time with no money, and that's very rare and precious. So appreciate your support.
Thank you. And this bill will be laid over. And next, we have Representative Jordan, House File 68, and I move that to be a laid over for possible inclusion. Go ahead, represent your bill, Representative Jordan. Welcome to your committees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, members. Sorry, I had to run over from the Capitol. But today I'm excited to be presenting House File 68, which is a bill to raise the daily per diem rate for a number of state boards that are in large part under your jurisdiction in some ways. These would raise the per diem rate from $55 a day to $125. This bill attempts to solve a problem that I think a lot of us, especially those of us who serve on this committee or serve on the Environment Committee, we've wondered how to solve the problem of making sure that our state boards represent the interest of all Minnesotans when there's a lack of regional, economic, racial, gender, age diversity on our boards. So if you think about how the legacy amendment and just this committee works is that, you know, people pay in. The people of Minnesota pay in with their purchases. And then a lot of times we see boards make the determination and narrow down how this money is spent, and then we all here in the legislature approve it. And we need to make sure that those boards are reflective of the people who not only pay in, but the people who are served by all of the wonderful organizations like the Como Zoo that you just heard from. And I've heard from a lot of Minnesotans that they can't afford to serve on these boards. Many cite taking time off work as a barrier, and others say they have young children and can't afford the child care. A perennial complaint that I have heard from Greater Minnesota is the ability to drive in and deal with all the gas and travel expenses, and none of these should be barriers to service. And that's why House File 68 proposes the daily increase per diem for public members, so not legislators, of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission, the Minnesota Zoological Board, the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, the Board of Soil and Water Resources, or Bowser, the Clean Water Council, the Environmental Quality Board, or EQB, and the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, or LCCMR. The $125 amount would bring these boards and commissions in line with those serving on watershed commissions and soil and water conservation districts, or SWCDs, which was a change that was championed by then Representative Mark Court in 2021 and had bipartisan support. This is a bill that I had introduced last session and was included in the conference committee report from the Republican Senate and Democratic House last year. Just keep in mind, again, that this per diem increase is only for public members and does not apply to legislators or agency heads. And I will close by letting you know that the last time this per diem rate was increased in 1990. That's the year that I was born. And so this per diem, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that this raise to $125 is also approximately and is even just a little bit less than what the per diem rate would have been had it kept up with inflation from 1990, according to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's the bill, Mr. Chair. I got ditched by my testifier who couldn't make it in from Bemidji, unfortunately, but I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Is there any discussion about the bill? Any questions? All right. Is there any, I don't see any comments. Would you like to have a comment?
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I know this is a little bit different sort of bill that you typically hear in legacy. I know you normally hear a lot about projects, but keep in mind that this is really foundational to how these projects come from just someone, you know, buying groceries to coming here before your committee. So these are the people that really streamline and make it so you're not hearing from every single person who went to Target last week for how you should spend your legacy money. So I think it's important to take care of the people who help us do our jobs.
Thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this great bill forward. This bill is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have next House File. House File 775, Representative Wren, and I will move that bill for layover and inclusions. Would you like to go ahead and present your bill?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Hussein, Chair Lilly, members of the committee. Today I want to present House File 775, which would appropriate $400,000 each of the years 2024 and 2025 to county agriculture societies to promote art, history, and cultural heritage at each of the county fairs across our state. I'll be brief. In my mind, there are three reasons, the three main reasons why we should make this investment. First, the funding reaches literally every county in the state. Second, this funding supports local artists. And third and finally, the legacy grants have revitalized our county fairs over the years. You know, we've had a number of challenges in recent years with COVID and not having county fairs and kind of bringing them back online and maybe reconsidering what county fairs look like, what opportunities they provide. And so with that, I think that this is really an important conversation for today. You know, I just want to say that this is an opportunity that's been funded in past years here at the legislature. And I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill vetted today. And I'll stand for questions or any comments that you have afterwards. But I want to turn it over to my testifier today. So
go ahead, Executive Gus.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Chair Lilly. Good morning. My name is Tiffany Gustin, and I was born and raised in Aiken County. And I have served as a director on the Aiken County Fair Board. I have exhibited at the fair for as long as I can remember, back to my 4-H days and now in open class as an adult. I'm now the proud parent of two children who are fourth-generation exhibitors. Since 2016, I have served as the executive secretary of the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs, and it is in that role that I appear in front of you today. The Minnesota Federation of County Fairs represents all of the county fairs from across the state of Minnesota. I am here today to support House File 775, which provides $400,000 per year for grants to county ag societies to promote art, history, and cultural heritage at each of the state's county fairs. This request, as stated, is the same amount that was granted by prior legislation, both in 2019 and 2021. And I would like to express my thanks to the committee for their past support, as well as to Representatives Brandon Purcell for authoring the bill. Just to give you some background on these grants, the grant amounts are divided equally amongst the county fairs who submit a qualifying grant application. The grant requests are submitted to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture through an online application process. Dacia Hinkhouse, who is a grant specialist for the Department of Agriculture, reviews each of these applications to make sure that each fair's proposed expenditures meet the requirements of the legacy funding. So why county fairs? On the website, theodysseyonline.com, there is a 2017 article written by Riley Derer titled, County Fairs Are Still Important. There's more to fairs than fried food and Ferris wheels. And I would like to simply quote a couple of phrases or a couple of sentences from the article. The first, and I will quote, fairs are the connecting point of the people and products that showcase our heritage, end quote. Showcase our heritage, that perfectly mirrors the mission of the legacy funds. The author further states, and I'll quote, fairs are not only promote agriculture, but also supply jobs, support rural economic development and local commerce, and provide opportunities for youth and adult education, end quote. These grants not only fulfill the mission of the legacy funds by providing arts, cultural, and historical opportunities, but also by dedicating these funds to each of your county fairs, you are also providing an economic impact. This $400,000 per year turns over within the state of Minnesota in a couple of different ways. First, the vendors, suppliers, and artists, the concentration has been on Minnesota artists and performers, so those dollars circulate within the state. Second, by enhancing programming through these dollars, it attracts and brings more people to the fair, increasing the dollars that fairgoers spend at the fair and by coming to the community that hosts it. I would be happy to forward a link to the article if you would like to read it in its entirety. In closing, in many parts of our state, especially in the rural areas, access to arts and cultural exhibits is limited, even a rarity. These dollars allow county fairs to bring arts and culture into the far corners of the state, providing convenient and in many cases free access. As you know, the challenge to opening people's minds to others who think and look differently from themselves, the challenge is getting them to the table. By providing arts and cultural opportunities at county fairs, you are reaching a demographic that may not spend an afternoon at a museum. Instead, you are bringing that arts and culture to the people. I will assure you that by providing this money to fairs, you will be empowering fairs to provide unique, affordable, and convenient access to these arts and cultural exhibits. Fairs have and will continue to use these funds to bring these exhibits to every corner of the state. I ask for your support of House File 775 to grant $400,000 each year to county fairs. Mr. Chair, Chair Lilly, and members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing me to speak to you today. In honor of your time, I will end my testimony, but I would gladly stand for any questions.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Hussein, and to the testifiers. And thank you for this bill. I love this bill. I love county fairs. I'm just a little confused about the operational part of it. It says that there be $400,000 to be distributed equally among the 95 county fairs, but then we also heard that it will be distributed equally among those who make qualifying grant applications. Mm-hmm. Does every county have a fair? Does every county get their 195th? And then if they don't submit their grant, they don't get the money? How does that operational?
Representative Bryan.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Finke. So how it works is it's 400,000 divided by the 87, plus there's a couple of counties that have additional fairs. They still would have to submit. It's not a given that they're going to get the money. They still have to do their due diligence to explain in 5,000 words or less what exactly it is that this money is going towards. And so we want to make sure that those people who are seeking those grants are still getting vetted, are still understanding what the money is going for. So there's that accountability on both sides of it through the Department of Agriculture.
Representative Vick.
Thank you, Representative Brand. But can each county only get 1/87th of this money? Is that how it's distributed?
Mr. Chair, I will address that question. For clarity, there are 87 counties within the state. There are seven counties that have more than one fair, which is how we get from the 87 counties until the 95. There were 90 fairs. The grant deadline was actually earlier in March. There were 90 fairs that applied for those dollars. So those are the 90 fairs that will be receiving the split of the grant dollars for the year. But all fairs have access to fill out that application. It's just the remaining fairs did not submit an application this year.
Representative Vang.
Thank you so much. Thank you. This is a great bill.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Finke asked the exact question that I was going to ask. I hope that the author will consider, because I think if the language here says that each county fair gets an equal amount of the grant, and it's somehow each county fair also have to submit an application for it, and not all county fairs submit. So I assume there might be some money left over. And so I don't want the application process to be a barrier for the county fairs to apply. And I did. It seems like the number amounts to about $4,000 per grant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a small amount of number, and I think counties can understand that this is the amount of money that's needed to do what we hope for, which is to preserve, promote Minnesota's history and cultural heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess perhaps look at fine-tuning the language a little bit more so that the application process isn't a barrier. Mm-hmm. For all county fairs to submit an application for it. So would appreciate that.
Representative Brandon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Vang. My only comment that I would make to that is that this bill has been vetted by the Association of Minnesota County Fairs, and so they're actually the ones that are behind this particular piece of legislation that we're talking about today. And so I think they understand that, and they also want to make sure that there is some sort of an accountability as well. Now, 90 fairs are going to get it this year. Maybe those fairs that didn't apply, didn't have capacity, or maybe they simply just don't have the room. Maybe they're going to do something else with that space too. So it's hard to really understand exactly why those five other county fairs aren't seeking the funding this year. But, I appreciate the comments.
Any comment, Representative Bay? Representative Backer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question deals with is, could you... I know you cannot name everything that they do? Because I'm assuming in the 5,000 words, they're going to tell you that they're going to do A, B, C, D. But could you kind of give what generally you see in the grant process? Do they do this type of display? Do they do a theater presentation? Just a little bit of background on that.
Okay. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Backer. So when I go to county fairs, I represent three different counties, and so obviously I'll go to those three county fairs each year, but I go to a lot of county fairs across the state. I really enjoy them, especially having kids. It's really important, I think, to find some entertainment, and these are great quality opportunities across our state. I have seen everything from displays talking about the history of the specific county. I have seen conversations about economy and different impacts that folks have had early on in Minnesota's history. I have seen living demonstrations. I have seen opportunities where there are historical schoolhouses and things like that. Like in Blue Earth County, they have a historical schoolhouse. And then they have volunteers that are living history talking about what it was like to go to a schoolhouse way back when. Those are the type of opportunities that I have seen. I'll turn it over to my testifier. I'm sure she has a couple of more that she can provide you details with as well.
Thank you so much. I did write down some notes. Again, having traveled around and seen the grant applications, we see things like blacksmithing demonstrations or perhaps related to wood carving or logging, as well as ethnic performers, different musical acts or dancing, different interpretive dancers and so on, but also demonstrations by artists. I know that one of the fairs that I went through to had a glass blowing demonstration. And again, just to reiterate, the schoolhouses, the Aiken County Fairgrounds has a log museum on our grounds that the Historical Society uses, and that has a rotating exhibit each year of a different cultural piece or historical piece from our community. Recently within our community, there was a small building that used to be on the river. It was a general store basically for river traffic, and I know that that's something that the fair, they don't have that on their application this year, but they're looking at possibly moving that building to the grounds and to really talk about the heritage of the community. So there's really a wide variety of different projects, and in each of the county fairs has done a really great job using the funds to highlight their particular area.
Any follow-up?
Yes, and first of all, fairs, I agree, do a wonderful job, and I knew that was probably going to be your answer, but I want to also let other members hear. Mm-hmm. It is really a wide range, and I do appreciate the flexibility that you give the local counties, because obviously what interests is in Traverse County is not necessarily going to be the same thing as Aiken County. So to give that flexibility and so forth, because Representative Brand, you're right, fairs bring in people. Mm-hmm. We have I represent now, I went from seven counties down to four counties, and people come out for the fairs, and those exhibits, some people spend more time than others. I do have to say that fairs are about fried food, okay? not healthy, but they are about fried food, so thank you.
Yeah. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Hussein. Thank you, Representative Brand. As a BIPOC member of this community and a young American, I would tell you that fairs and these display of arts and culture and heritage is very important. Mm-hmm. You know, Chair Lilly has a favorite child. This is my favorite child, is the county fairs, okay? Because it encompasses the things I care about, which is agriculture, you know, historical landmarks, and the heritage of these towns and counties and how they've made it through, you know, the many years they've been in existence. And it highlights the people of those towns and definitely highlights the culture and, of course, the history and the heritage. And so, you know, one of my favorite displays is the arts center at each of these county fair, which I've attended. You know, my children, I have attended county fairs for over 20 years. You know, it's something that I cherish, and it's the arts and cultural heritage display that I am drawn to, besides the, you know, the poultry and the animal, the pig competition. But I just want to highlight that, you know, it is an important piece, and it's as important as library is to our community. So thank you.
Final question, Chair Lilly, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Brand, thank you very much for bringing us to all of us today. I was lucky enough this last summer to go up with former chair of AG to I think it was Carlton County, and they happened to be doing a legacy performance there, and it was amazing on so many aspects because it you know, it's jobs. you know they hired performers and they were doing a performance with legacy money of the Wizard of Oz, and people were underneath the canopy and they were on a hot day, and I think I was usually doing what usually when I go to a fair I'm doing what Mr. Representative across the aisle there mentioned as far as eat my way through the fair, but it was really nice to see families sitting there and enjoying a performance, and I happened to be there with the Ag Commissioner because I believe you also have some ag efforts too that go into the county fairs, and so I'm excited for the summer to go with Chair Vang, and we can or Representative Cha, we or other committee members, maybe we can get around the state and go to some fairs, but I know they're very valued for our state, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Mm-hmm. Closing comments, Representative Brandon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the opportunity, committee, to hear the bill and ask good questions. I really do appreciate that. I will point out that in the other body is bipartisan. I always seek to have bipartisan bills, and so there's plenty of room for all of you to get onto this bill. Last thing I would say is, in addition to the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs, this is also supported by the Minnesota Farm Bureau and the Minnesota Farmers Union, and so there's some real impact when we're talking about agriculture, and that's why they support it so much. With that, I will renew my motion that this bill be laid over, and please consider this in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The bill is laid over, and we have a House File 1901, Representative Ardo.
All right. Thank you.
Chair, yes. I'll give him a call. He was here, and I just saw him step out.
Okay. Is there anyone else that can start the bill? You know, we can move forward.
I guess I can speak to it if we need to move it and not wait for him. Let me give him a quick call.
I moved House File 1901. 901, to laid over.
Well, I'll fill in. I don't look like her doll, but I'll fill in for him, so. Go ahead.
That would be fine.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. On your bill.
I will turn it over to our testifier, okay? He knows more about this than I do, I can assure you. So go ahead.
That would be the short essence that you give me. So
if there's a lot of questions, remember, I may punt the ball to someone else.
All right, here he is.
Oh, I was filling in for you.
And you were doing a great job.
I know. Hey, you've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
Want a fish? You need my sandwich?
No. No sharing.
Thank you for your taking the leadership in... Mr. Ferdy, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Keegan Flaherty, and I serve as the grants manager for the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. Executive Director Gijek sends her regrets that she's unable to join us this morning. She is sick and mentioned that she enjoys presenting to this committee and Chair Lily's leadership as well as the support of the committee has shown our agency. Mike would like to formally offer support of House File 901, which appropriates funds to support the continued preservation and revitalization efforts of the Dakota and Ojibwe languages through grants administered by the Indian Affairs Council. The two languages are the most enduring languages of what is now known as Minnesota. Little represents the rich cultural heritage of Minnesota more than its indigenous languages. The Indian Affairs Council has received an appropriation from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund since 2010 and has awarded numerous grants to tribal nations, institutions, and organizations throughout the state with the sole purpose of revitalizing native languages. MIAC plays a critical role in administrating the statewide grant program and is committed to continue to carefully monitor the grant-funded projects along with careful review and approval of payments. Included in your packets is our annual report to the legislature where the two-year grant awards are publicized. Page 9 specifically gives an overview of the language grant program. In the interest of time, I won't go into detail, but it is in your packet. MIAC is also charged with the American Indian Graves protection on public and private lands under various state and federal laws. Our cultural resource unit works closely with the Office of State Archaeologists and cares for human remains in the only osteology lab of its kind at Hamline University. Funding is needed to continue to care for Native American remains and to carry out the duties outlined in the state and federal law. I wanted to thank you for your time and support on behalf of American Indian Graves Protection and the protection of, and preservation of indigenous language in Minnesota.
Thank you, and Representative Arlen.
Mr. Chair, and first of all, I congratulate you on your efficiency in running this. It was 11:30 on my schedule, but I should have recognized that a new chairman today, things would be a little more efficient. We'd move right along.
We're moving fast.
I just wanted to say that this is very. We are arts and cultural heritage. Language is part of culture. It's been a very important program over the years to help save languages in Minnesota, the Dakota, Ojibwe, excuse me. And so I can't talk. That sandwich, whatever.
Drink some water. No.
Water. I'm better again. Right, sorry. I think every bill since 2010 regarding this I've carried. And so I have a long time commitment to helping to preserve these Dakota and Ojibwe languages. It's a very important program, I think. I'd like to see it continue.
Thank you. Next testifier, please identify yourself and proceed.
Kami Takiapi, Erila Leith Imakiapi, Dakota Ia Ampetu Wakami Imakiapi, Damakota, Chanchayapi Hematoha, Wania Tu Akimanupa Samashakpe, Chanchayapi Wakanija Owaya Wa Oti Ed Duanie, Dakota Iapi Unspe Mikchikje, Ichinks Dakota Iapi Nina Tawahira, Stomakiekte. Hello, my relatives. My name is Erila Leith. My Dakota name is Ampetu Wakami, which means Sacred Sun Woman. I'm Dakota, and I come from where they paint the trees red, also known as the Lower Sioux Indian Community. I'm 26 years old, and I teach language with children at our tribe's birth to 5 Dakota Immersion School, Chanchayapi Wakanija Owaiwa Oti, or Sibu, the first and only Dakota Immersion School on tribal lands. Our mission is to raise the next generation of Dakota Iapi speakers. My most important role is being a mother to a wonderful Hokshita named Marcus, a recent Sibu graduate. We opened our doors in August of 2018. That same year, we started teaching Dakota language at the two high schools just 10 miles from Lower Sioux. I, along with my tribe, believe that learning our language can help us heal from historical trauma. The language holds our sense of belonging, our values, our worldviews, our history, and so much more. When we know our language, we know who we are, and we know where we're going as our language leads us. Thanks to Sibu, my son knows his language. He knows who he is, and he is very proud to be Dakota. Thanks to the high school and community classes Lower Sioux offers, my son will continue to speak Dakota throughout his life. I stand before you here today asking for support and to continue the necessary funding for the legacy funds, as it helps my tribe grow the capacity to learn and speak Dakota. In 2017, Lower Sioux lost our last first language speaker. Today, in the state of Minnesota, only 5 first language speakers are still alive, and they are all over the age of 67. We are in a race to revitalize our language. Currently, we work with 2 first language speakers using distance learning, thanks to legacy funding. We also have 2 language teachers who are considered advanced. One of them we pay for with legacy funding. Our teachers at CWU are novice, a low to immediate or intermediate low, as they are learning the language as we teach it. We need to continue to build capacity. Legacy funding has been helping us significantly, and I recommend it continue. In 2022, 33% of community members were learning or speaking Dakota, up 20% from 2019. This is because we have been able to teach the language in the community, high schools, and CWU. We could not have done this without legacy funding. It took a lot of resources and time to take our language away from us historically, and now it will take a lot more to bring it back. Pidamaya Yapi for letting me speak about Minnesota's first language and my community's efforts in revitalizing our language.
Thank you. Next testifier, please identify yourself and proceed.
Bonjour. Netani Miramo Kwa Indigenikas, Makwanin Dude, Mikanako Wajo and Dunjiba, Nimikoinamag, and eight Natawajaboimojig, Nimichuindamayan. Hello, my name is Netani Imed or Persia Erdrick. I'm grateful to be here with you today. In 2010, MIAC funding helped us to start our program, Ojibwe Motari Da Omagide Kimanang, Let's Speak Ojibwe to Each Other Here on Our Earth, through the Fond du Lac Tribal College on the homelands of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Our program first started when myself and 2 other graduates from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities Ojibwe Language Program realized that in order to become truly proficient speakers of Ojibwe, we needed to learn from the few remaining first speakers, our Ojibwe elders. The Fond du Lac Tribal College helped us to begin our program and gave us the support and campus to make it a reality. That summer, we lived in the college dorms with the elders. By living together, we were able to learn the Ojibwe language we needed in all parts of our lives, from cooking to shopping to traditional harvesting and crafts to playing cribbage, telling jokes and stories, and so much more. MIAC funding specifically helped us to record the elders who devoted themselves to this project. Most of those elders have since passed. Only 2 remain with us. However, because of the MIAC funding, what they wanted to impart to future generations is preserved and available to all who wish to learn it. Every year since then, we have received MIAC funds for our recording, documenting, and material creation initiatives as we continue to grow. Our biggest expansion has been to start a new program for families. Kukunanig Ain Dawad, Grandma's House, is a language program where parents and infants to 5-year-olds come to learn and speak the language together. Our program started right before the pandemic, and so during lockdown, the MIAC funds were essential for language learning kits we could send to families to use in their homes. We had Zoom sessions with elders to record, but also to visit and support one another. The elders kept us going when it got tough, and we're thrilled to get to meet the new babies. Because of MIAC support, children were still able to learn at home, and we now have toddlers who are speaking Ojibwe as their first language. Currently, MIAC is supporting our work to learn everything from traditional parenting, our Ojibwe lunar calendar, to creating puppet shows, songs, and stories to engage our young children. For myself and countless others, learning our language has shaped our lives and led to profound healing, purpose, and joy. MIAC funding supports us to create the materials that learners and teachers need all over Minnesota and Ojibwe country to carry on their own journeys of healing. The elders' hopes for the future are starting to become a reality. They are able to speak Ojibwe with our youngest children. In a circle of healing in my own family, my 2-year-old speaks Ojibwe as his first language, as his great-great-grandfather did. One of our elders, Ogimaogonevic Nancy Jones, speaks about how these children will be the elders someday. They will be the keepers of the language and knowledge that they are learning from our few remaining elders. Right now in our program, we are at a very fragile stage. Few elder first speakers remain. We urgently need continued funding to record everything we possibly can as we continue to build towards our dream to revitalize the language and to nurture a new generation of first speakers of Ojibwe. On behalf of our ancestors, elders, learners, parents, toddlers, and future generations, we are grateful to your support. Miigwech.
The last testifier, please proceed and identify your name. Yourself.
Puju, Jawanu Benesikwe Indigu, Skylar Kuzabowski and Indigenakas, Gazakasquaj Mekag and Dunjabash, Kabagazibing and Danungam,
Hello, everyone. My name is Skylar Kuzabowski. I am the Grants Administration Support at the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. I'd like to share with you that I was able to learn my language through St. Paul Public Schools, American Indian Magnet School, and Harding Senior High School. And I continue to study the language through college classes today. A little over a month ago, MIAC hosted our annual language symposium. One of our keynote speakers, TPZ Witowin, asked everyone, tell me why you want to learn your language. And all I could think of was my grandma. She was born in the Leech Lake Reservation in a town called Onigum. She grew up speaking Ojibwe, and then she moved to the cities when she was around 5 years old. She no longer speaks Ojibwe because lack of access to speakers back home, lack of Ojibwe instruction through school, and overall urbanization and assimilation. When she lost her language, she lost her connection to her home and to many of her family members. Once, I was sitting with my grandma telling her about my Ojibwe professor's latest lecture, and she began to cry. I was confused and asked her why, and she told me that it hurt her how she was never able to learn her language. This is not a unique story. Many indigenous people have similar experiences to this. The lack of fluency in our communities is a painful reminder of the historical trauma we have. And when we learn our language, we heal from the pain that remains from the past. Our language, our culture, our history, and our identity are all connected. You can't have one without the other. Our language is who we are, and everyone deserves to have access to it. Miu miigwech.
Thank you. Is there any question about the bill or any discussion?
Thank you, Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Scott.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Bonjour, Niji. I guide canoe trips in that in Lac La Croix with the Geishiks, and I was looking forward to maybe saying hello and see how it's going. Do these funds help me with, can the kids in public school come and learn this, or is this just all on tribal lands, or where can anybody come and learn this?
So the thank you, Chair, and the funds are, we have three separate grant funds, so we are kind of streams. So we have one that is for like specifically goes to tribal nations, one that goes to specifically immersion schools, and another one that is competitive. And so in the competitive, in the past, we've had, for instance, like St. Paul Public Schools, I know, was a previous grantee. Any entity or any organization that would be eligible to apply to the RFP, there's obviously some stipulations within the RFP, is eligible to fund. So it's sort of a mixture. So there's some on tribal lands. I also know we have some, like, in the metro. And that, hopefully I answered your question.
Representative Scott.
Yes, it did. Can a non-tribal member go to any of these courses on, like let's say I wanted to learn the language, and I only want to learn from elders or from people that have the knowledge. Is there a place for me to try to find the time, or is this more for younger people?
Representative Flo. I mean, Mr. Flo.
Chairman and Representative, I don't want to speak out of turn. My understanding is that it would be up to the individual agency or the individual organization who receives the grant funds. Let me get back to you because I don't want to necessarily speak. Like
that's perfectly, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. That's perfectly fine. I'm just curious because I want to see the language continue. It's, you know, it's cultural heritage. What makes us go. So, you know, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Hussein. Thank you, Representative Erdo, for bringing this bill forward with Representative Keeler. I appreciate bills like this because I'm going to speak in regards to my language, which is the Hmong language. You know, we are ancient people of what is now known as China. We've been there for over 5,000 years, and we have a history, but it has been erased, it has been forgotten. Our language is forbidden to be spoken. And so through many, many years and centuries, we had to we were not allowed to write our language or speak it. And so we had to sew our alphabet, our culture, and our history into textile. And that's why our textile is important to us. What we have left as Hmong Americans is what we discussed the other day that was given to the Historical Society. That is all that we have left of our history that was brought over here to America after the Refugee War. And that's the importance of those artifacts and the language that we still have. And we're losing our language too, you know, as we become more Americanized, you know. And it's important to preserve that language, because if we lose that language, we lose our history, right, our heritage and our culture. We lose that connection, you know. And so the importance of your language resonates with me as a Hmong American, you know, that is losing my language, you know, losing my culture and heritage. So anything that we do as this committee to preserve that is the right thing to do. So thank you, Representative Erdo, for bringing this forward.
Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. And myself is, the more we learn language, the more we know people's culture. And it's very important for us to get to know one another. And any comment, closing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank the committee for their attention and questions and comments. It's a very important piece of legislation that I think fits very well with what Legacy and Cultural Heritage Fund is entitled to do. And I'd like to thank Representative Lilly for the support that he's shown for this over the years. Again, it's been, you know, since 2010, and a lot of chairs over that time period have been supportive of this program and urge you to continue to be. So thank you.
Thank you. This bill will be laid over. And I'm looking forward to hand over the cabinet, Representative Lee.
All right, next on the agenda, we have House File 1154, Representative Hussein. Representative Hussein, do you move House File 1154 to be laid over for possible inclusion?
I move. Thank you.
Please proceed, Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Lee, and the members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1154, a bill that continue and expand the incredible work being done for the Minnesota humanity for the past for many, many years. The Minnesota Humanities Center is collaborated with individuals, organizations, and the community to bring transformational humanities programming into the life of our community. Minnesota throughout the state, the Minnesota Humanities Center uses stories, and they have been a champion for our community, for the legacy, and I'm honored to represent this bill, and I would love to have my testifier come forward.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Either one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hussein. Thank you, members of the committee. Joining me today is Casey D. Murray. She is vital and really important in the grants administration piece. Appreciating that we're here talking about legacy program. If there's time and interest, we can spend a minute or two just talking about grants administration. I appreciate that that may be an issue of import for this committee soon. As Representative Hussein stated, the Minnesota Humanities Center has been in existence for over 50 years. As many of you know, Vice President Hubert Humphrey from Minnesota was instrumental in passage of the National Endowment for the Humanities back in the late 60s. Minnesota was one of the very first states in the nation to raise its hand to say that it wanted an affiliate with the National Endowment for the Humanities, and that started again in October of 1971. Our vision is a just society that is curious, connected, and compassionate. Curious that we come to conversations with open hearts and open minds to authentically hear and listen to one another. Connected, as Dr. King reminds us, that we see ourselves tied to a garment of mutual destiny. What impacts one impacts the other. And we need to be committed to move beyond empathy toward action. And that's where we say compassion begins. So for us, the programs that we seek to create and to bring forward seek to create a more just society. I'd also be remiss not to quickly point out and to thank the legislature for the bonding dollars that we're giving to the Minnesota Humanities Center as well. We have completed the renovations on our respective building. We are hoping to return back to our pre-COVID levels of where we have 350 to 400 events at the Minnesota Humanities Center. The basement level within the Humanities Center serves as a retreat hotel center, so we have 15 hotel quality rooms for people to stay overnight. That also helps to facilitate what I'm going to say a little bit later on as it relates to the work in education. Again, our request is for $2 million for FY24 and $2 million for FY25. For information for the committee, our current appropriation in legacy is 1.25 for programming. We believe, because of the testimony that you heard just before, just to illustrate an example of a partnership, we partnered with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council on the Dakota Ojibwe Language Symposium in Mille Lacs. Actually, Casey was doing double duty that day and actually was in Mille Lacs for the symposium as well. Creating these linkages within education, creating these linkages within the state, we have heard time and time again that there is a greater need to create that type of connection, that creative oneness within the state. So again, let us walk through some of the areas in which we're kind of seeing this idea of connecting or bringing people together through convening or inspiring respective change. The very first is leveraging technology. We found out within the silver lining within the pandemic that by accessing and utilizing and tapping into technology differently, we could serve all 87 counties of Minnesota more effectively. We have done some things very differently than what we have done in the past, using podcast, Zoom, digital storytelling. We anticipate for school districts that this is going to be an increasing need, and we seek to help facilitate them as they deal with staffing shortages for instructional leaders within school districts. One other thing tied to the language within the National Endowment of Humanities, it talks about understanding and ensuring that we don't become unwitting servants of our technology. They wrote those words back in the late 60s. Again, this idea of seeing Star Trek and just being scary about having something in your hand and being able to know exactly where you were on the planet. That seems kind of quaint and antiquated today when we talk about all the advances in technology. But I would say it's a really important conversation for us to be having throughout the state. There are folks that are feeling anxiousness around this idea of will technology replace their jobs, searching for meaning, what does this mean for life going forward. So for us, some of these dollars will be scoping out conversations with local universities, local community groups, individuals throughout the state to explore this connection to technology. We also work as a bridge connector. Many Fronts, Veterans and Community Voices is an effort of rebranding our Veterans Voices work. We appreciate the work in the past from this committee and from members within our veterans community. You should take pride in the fact that Minnesota is recognized among humanities councils across the country as a leader in veterans-related programming. Within this space, a couple of points that I just want to raise on recent programming. We did Objects of War, in which veterans had an opportunity to bring dog tags, good luck charms, letters, something that was of meaning to them. Loved ones of veterans were able to bring meaning to that. So we got to learn the personal story, and then by telling that story, we're able to digitize and then also allow for individuals who were out in Zoom world to be able to understand not only the personal story, but how the world had changed after the individual in either the conflict or in their tour of duty, what that then meant. Very well received by many people throughout the state. We also have done programming, again, with plays and with art, sort of with Ordway, the Soldier Story Project. A Soldier Story, a play about a murder investigation at this point in time in our nation's history on a segregated base in the Deep South. This play explored several issues within the Black American experience. This was an opportunity for us to partner with the Ordway and have storytelling community conversations after the play. We also had an opportunity to uplift David Mura's production with TPT, exploring Japanese Americans serving as code breakers in World War II at Fort Snelling. So just quickly a couple of the things there. Diversity, equity, and inclusion in that space. The St. Paul Chamber of Commerce asked us if we would enter into a partnership with the business community to provide immersive experiences. We've agreed to provide 4 immersive experiences. These will take place over the next 7 to 8 months. We also have facilitated conversations on art and play. I really appreciate the conversation that was had today. A couple of plays that we're working on. One is Kumbaya, recognizing the federal holiday for the Juneteenth. We have commissioned and partnered with playwright Rose McGee of Kumbaya to do this play in several places throughout the state. Wonderless Production, as some of you may know, did a capital play project, actually talking about how this place, this institution works. So we're going to be partnering with Wonderless to take that play in little small snippets, again, across the state, to be able to uplift the stories of civics education. The space within lifelong learning, expanding school partnerships. So to the question about extending partnership and information from indigenous lens and indigenous perspective, without naming the high school, but a very prominent high school student, a very prominent high school that receives sufficient funding where you would not think that this might be a viewpoint or a statement of some of their students, they indicated that they thought that there were no more indigenous people in the state of Minnesota. So I appreciate Representative Erdahl's efforts, Representative Lilly's efforts to help us support why treaties matter 8-9 years ago. And I really give you that in the context of how much has changed just in a relatively short period of time and how vital important it is to uplift and tell this story and this history. Because that's not really that long ago for these viewpoints and positions to be held. Expanding learning from place, also what was said here today about the importance of geography. So we're doing several projects throughout the state where we're identifying a particular point of interest and then identifying 2 or 3 areas around that point of interest and then telling the story. Give you a specific example is Bidote. So as many of you know, where the Minnesota and Mississippi River are coming together, it's a point of origin story for the Dakota people. So we talk about Fort Snelling or from the vantage point of Dakota, Mounds Park, Pilot Knob Road, and in sharing that information, providing it to a local school district, in this case the St. Paul School District, we have found that there are community members, business leaders that are very interested in experiencing that same kind of field trip. So we've now started to do this in other parts of the state. So there will be 2 or 3 more learning from place kind of opportunities in that space. Again, this is a greater demand, again, that we're sensing throughout the entirety of the state. In the space of civic engagement, at the national level, the National Endowment for the Humanities, again, I appreciate the past support of this committee and the legislature for us to provide funding to support efforts on the history of boarding schools. The chair of the National Endowment for the Humanities has provided a small set of money, which we'll seek to match and then uplift and amplify the history of boarding schools throughout the nation's history. We find that teachers really are looking for, again, because of the staffing shortage, opportunities to have curriculum and materials, which is kind of pre-baked. Doesn't mean that it's completely set. They still have the ability to adjust to change it as they need. But more information being provided to instructional leaders just simply because there's just fewer and fewer teachers to be able to take on those tasks and duties within their school districts. So they're looking for more partners in this way. The National Humanities Alliance has asked us to be in partnership with the University of Minnesota, Carleton College, and a couple of other colleges to think again how we can support K-12 instructors throughout the state. Civic engagement is critically important. We had a conversation yesterday with young advocates and students across the country, across the state, talking about the importance of having their voices heard within their respective schools. This committee has provided historically grants in the area of civics to three organizations. I will carry forward what I heard from this group is that there is interest to provide opportunities for more grant funding in the area of civics all throughout. We're seeking to facilitate opportunities for teacher retreats and opportunities to learn more within civics within our respective retreat center. This is really just the tip of the iceberg, what I shared with you. I appreciate that I have a limited amount of time. I might have actually exceeded my amount of time. But I'm really excited about the amount of change and the interest in the programming that is happening at the Humanities Center. There are great opportunities for us as a state to build and be a model around the entire nation of how we value and respect one another. I'd used the King quote earlier. There is another passage from one of his speeches from Mount Vernon, Iowa, that has been resonating with my head about this idea of being able to really know, appreciate one another. In this idea of creating this beloved community, when that exists, that community can do all things. It can do great things. And I think the legacy funding, providing funding for people to get to know each other over bread, get to know each other through dance or song or through art, or just being able to hear stories, provides an opportunity for Minnesota to be a true North Star. So I really thank you for this opportunity to talk about the programming piece. That last slide as it relates to grants, I can talk a little bit about that, but I think I'd just take a pause here and then see if there are any questions.
Please proceed with the last slide if you want to cover that.
In the area of grant making, as many of you know, the space of grant making that this committee can do is tied to programming. So one of the challenges for a lot of nonprofits across the state is that they are limited on their capacity to grow, because they need to have active donors to be able to draw in income for administrative overhead expenses. So again, if my administrative overhead expenses are 15% of my operations as an organization, I might be great at writing programming applications to bring in dollars, but I can't use those dollars from our great foundations like St. Paul or McKnight or others within the state. I have to find other resources to be able to do that. One of the challenges for the organizations that we funded, and we funded 73% of the funding that you gave us to organizations under 500,000, if they can't use any percentage of that for administrative overhead to grow staff, it's hard for them to grow as organizations. I think that's worthy of an issue in which to look at for the respective committee. I think for us, we're also hearing that there is a greater demand to sort of grow cultural organizations beyond the amount that was given. So again, last biennium, it was $5 million a year. We received about $7.5 to $8 million of grant-worthy projects. So there's $2.5 million and $3 million that we kind of left on the table because we didn't have enough money to be able to fund those projects. I don't see any shortage of sort of good ideas coming forward within that space. So we are eager and happy to work with this committee. We do have conversations with foundations as well to see how we can potentially leverage and scaffold up respective projects. And I would be remiss not to say we also seek to keep our eye on resources at the federal level. One quick example. Minnesota does not have a site identified by the National Parks Services under the Underground Railroad. So as many of you know, an Underground Railroad existed in this country to help facilitate people escaping from slavery. More than 700 sites are identified on the National Park Registry. None are in Minnesota. We have found two locations, which we believe will receive designation in the short term. But wouldn't that be wonderful if we could take some of the dollars that we are having and exploring it with history, tapping into the National Park Service? The National Park Service has dollars for all of those sites, so that then starts to bring back dollars. And it also rounds out the ability to teach history within our respective schools and breaks this dichotomy of us them.
Thank you. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Hussein, for your work on this. Mr. Lindsay, thank you very much for being here today, and you're always available, and you've just been amazing, you know, long before I was chair on this, on your, you know, the humanities has, and then you've taken over the leadership there. I've just been incredible, and I love your the efforts that you're doing for us, and you know, and we also, you know, you've leaned into that space that in helping us figure out the new grants program that we started a couple of years ago, and I just heard your new suggestions, and hopefully we can. I'm kind of looking over at our team to hopefully we can incorporate that and get that and then the additional suggestions. I just really want to say thank you for your work, and I just hope that all the committee knows that the work that you are doing, and you know, a couple things have happened today that really stick out, and the language preservation suggestions, and you know, certainly for our new neighbors, I think we're gonna have to start some programming there to figure out that to work on preservation for maybe our Hmong neighbors or Somali neighbors or beyond, I don't know, but it makes a lot of sense to start that process while we that we can, and I'm certain that you can help us with that. I want to thank you for yesterday. You got up and spoke about how important this isn't really to do with this today, but it's important how much this committee, the good work that we're able to do in this legacy space and with these funds, and you talked about something, when I'm done I'll probably just have you comment about what you heard nationally, some of the, that were, other states are a little bit jealous of what we're able to do. But and just finally, I want to thank you, and then if maybe offline we can talk. Well, a real question I would have is the capacity that to grow. So you mentioned you had $7 million of requests. Do you feel that you would be able to comfortably handle if we were, as we roll things out, if we were able to be around $10 million or more? And what number do you think would probably make the most sense? So that would be kind of a question. And then I guess that's it. But thank you for your work and the grant person. Thank you. I know it's, you're doing your best really proud of the work that you've done so far. Thank you.
Mr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Representative Lilly and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm going to pick up on the last piece on sort of recognizing Casey for her work. When I started back in June of 2019, I said one of the things that I think the Humanities Center could do for the state of Minnesota is to be very efficient in reaching out to very small nonprofit cultural organizations within the state and kind of set a standard. And I really just publicly want to thank Casey and the rest of the team for rising to that challenge. I think they have done tremendous work. I also appreciate the opportunity to work with the legislature to find language that makes sense. Some of the work that I've done in the past has been to streamline administrative processes so they don't become cumbersome and burdensome for individuals. And I really appreciate, again, the work of the staff to be able to do that. I look forward to working with the legislature in this space to the specific question of $10 million. We did have that conversation with our board actually back in February of sort of starting to do scenario planning of sort of if this happened or if that happened, not knowing where it would ultimately land. But as an organization, being prepared, there's a quote I'm reminded of General Eisenhower, is that you make a plan every day. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to implement the plan, right? But you're prepared. And then when things happen, you're able to more adeptly move in that direction. So for us, please know that this is not catching us by surprise, kind of the nature of this conversation that's happening, and we've given some thought to it. To your question about language, again, this is a distinction between some of the historical entities at the national level and the National Endowment for the Humanities. The National Endowment for the Humanities actually does preserve oral history and storytelling, so there would be some dollars available for grant applications that we could help prepare for some organizations in that way. I say that because the National Endowment application process is not an easy one. It is a very complex kind of process. We do have people on our staff, though. Karen Sieber, Casey also is in this mix as well, that have had success, though, in applying for those grants. And when we have done so, we have done so being very intentional in being collaborative with many groups. One would be actually the Why Treaties Matter exhibit would be one in which we work with all 11 federally recognized tribes, which is still recognized. I think the last thing that you mentioned was what I had heard within D.C. And what I had heard in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, people were talking about what were models to uplift culture, art, and history and bringing people together within their respective states. And the Legacy Amendment was identified as one of those shining examples of a piece of legislation that works tremendously well. So it was a blessing to be in space, to be able to talk on behalf of the state and uplift the state and its work with the Legacy Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Representative Cha, final questions and comments, so please keep it short.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Director Lindsay, for your thorough presentation, as always, and your care in this matter. You know, I just want to reiterate the importance of the legacy funds and, you know, the importance of the Historical Society along with the arts and culture and the humanities, how important it is to, you know, the communities of Minnesotans, you know, and especially, you know, I always speak about this API community because, you know, it's been a long time coming. And obviously there is four Hmong Americans sitting on this chair, three of them who are chaired in their respective committees. And that should reflect the importance of, you know, arts and culture and language preservation of all American communities, right? Not just the API, but all inclusive of every Minnesotans. And so, you know, I appreciate your leadership in this work. And again, thank you, Chair Lilly, for being chair of this committee. And thank you for your leadership. So with that, thanks for being here.
Closing comments, Representative Hussein.
Thank you for supporting this bill. And this organization would uplift arts, cultural, and the legacy in our state. And I hope we can have you all supporting this great organization who has a good track record. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. House File 1154 is layover. Members, having no business before us, the meeting is adjourned.